podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Frank Benali.
This is Klaus Lundekvam.
I'm Matt Letitia.
Dean Hammond here.
And you're listening to In That Number.
Here is Letitia in the stands. Number! There's the reply. Barry Fahars. History made.
It's James Beattie. Oh, Belter.
Barry Fahars.
Lifts it and he's got it in as well! And Danny Ings has done it again!
Thanks for checking out In That Number with me, Kevin, the Moscow Mush Milverton, and Ray Hunt. Find me on Twitter at Moscow Mush and my co-host Ray Hunt at RayHunt84. Follow the show at Number Podcast on Twitter, In That Number Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. If you've got any questions for the show, if you can be bothered, send us an email to inthatnumberpodcast@gmail.com. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever it is you get your podcasts. Share, subscribe, and give us good vibes. Let's go.
Welcome back to another episode of In That Number. Proud to be part of the Sport Social Network. This is episode 170, and today we will go through Saturday afternoon's disappointing trip to Selhurst Park. Try as we might, we just couldn't find the equaliser. Is the lack of a natural goal scorer going to be our eventual downfall? Are we going to be able to pick ourselves up for the final run before the World Cup? And a question that's been bothering me for a while now, has Prowsey done enough to get on that plane with Southgate? We will also be previewing our home game against high-flying Newcastle. Can we take anything against them? All of these questions answered by the panel, which consists of the Moscow Mush, Kevin Milverton and Tim Bazance. Firstly, Kevin, how are you and how has your week been in the UK?
All right. Yeah, it's been quite tiring. I've had quite a busy working week. I've been working from here too. And, not quite had as much free time as I would have hoped. But, it's good to be here.
I know what you're like. You're a workaholic, Kevin. You never stop. You're always working. It's
no rest for the wicked.
Exactly. But, yeah, how's the mood anyway in general?
From a Saints point of view, I mean, going into this match, we were sort of reassured that the rot had stopped, weren't we? We had sort of mini good run of form back out of the relegation zone as quick as we crept into it, and I think, you know, we're out of that hot water. That Palace game, yeah, mixed bag really, wasn't it?
Well, it was similar to recent weeks, wasn't it? Because you just don't seem strong enough for the full 90 minutes of a game. But then the second half, we were much better, much like the Arsenal game. Ultimately, we just weren't good enough, which resulted in a very disappointing result and one that we were looking at to take something from.
Yes, yeah, certainly. I mean, this is the one fixture after those three results that you think that we should be able to get something out of. Before the World Cup, we've got Newcastle and Liverpool, and that's it, isn't it? And that cup tie, I think.
That's right, yeah. There's cup tie in between, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Newcastle and Liverpool are hard to beat.
I don't know. Leeds don't seem to think so.
Well, yeah, it's a weird season, isn't it, this season?
It's very, very weird, yeah.
A lot of weaker teams picking up points against stronger teams.
Well, there's hope for us yet, then.
Yeah, I mean, Forest managing to pull off results and still be bottom of the table. It's a very funny season.
Yeah, and Tim, how have you been this week?
Not too bad, not too bad at all. Just moving a house and closing up a job and hoping and starting a new one soon. And in the move, you got it obviously packed, but then move cross country too. So lots going on and always just trying to stay proactive on it.
And you're not stressing yourself out too much with the football?
Yeah, I'm just kind of trying to let it ride and know that hopefully somewhere, some way down the line, we'll be able to change our current setup or status and just get ourselves where we need to be to not get relegated this year.
17th, that's all we need to do. That's all we need. It's really, really easy to focus on the result as a whole and say, yeah, okay, we lost 1-0 to Crystal Palace And you look at the Premier League table, the table doesn't lie. And with Newcastle and Liverpool coming up just before the break, you know, you lose both of those and we're in deep trouble, aren't we, really? And it just makes this Palace result even more of a punch in the gut. But I don't know, we still have to keep the faith. And, you know, we've been in trouble before and we've been written off before and we've come through it. So we can do this again. And, you know, as I said, Leeds went to Anfield yesterday and took all the points. So we still need to hang on to hope.
We have to. I mean, there's no other choice, though. We can't just, you know, get bogged down at all, can we?
Exactly. Tim, is the break what we need right now?
Yeah, absolutely. There's something that just needs to adjust and change. And for all of us, at least, and by all of us, I mean everybody who's in the lower half of the table right now, there are 7 points separating between 9th and 20th. So keeping that, there isn't any people that are pushing way beyond except for the traditional groups. So we just got to think, what can we do and try to stop the rot and get some points going into the winter, the holiday, well, not the holiday break, the World Cup break, and hope for the best, really.
Yeah, and Kev, trying to take a positive spin from the World Cup, right? A lot of our players are going to be going. You know, I don't expect Bella Kotchap to make the squad. I don't expect James Ward-Prowse to make the squad. There's a lot of players that probably won't be going. There's not, I mean, all the players that are staying, it could benefit them being around the club. And maybe, you know, there was talk about them going to Miami for winter training. This could, you know, prove to be positive in the end.
I guess we'll only be able to talk in hindsight. Maybe it'll be another project restart. Maybe it will just get worse for us. It's going to be interesting to watch.
Yes. And if you would like to support our efforts and help to keep the show ticking over, then please consider donating and head to buymeacoffee.com/inthatnumber. Just the cost of a coffee or anything really will be very much appreciated. You can also check out our membership and become a member if you wish. So yeah, go and check them out. We have to hit the ITN news then, fellas.
Hit it. This is ITN In That Number News.
Okay, ITN News. We'll start with some... Well, I think today we've got nothing but positive news to go through. Because the first bit of news that popped up in the week is Remy Olavia returning to training. Didn't quite make that Wednesday open training day, which was a bit of a surprise because he was there for the Thursday sessions. And actually, he was included in the B team today as we take on Middlesbrough. We're actually playing in the second half right now. That's massive, isn't it? Because, well, I mean, it seems odd that he wasn't ready yesterday, but he is today. What did you think of that, Kev?
Maybe he just didn't fancy risking him, and the B team's a bit low intensity. Sub him off, be fine.
Yeah, it's low intensity. Get him straight back into something like that. He's been training. He feels okay. But, I mean, his return can't come soon enough, could it? I mean, for himself, for the team, and for James Ward-Prowse. Because Jacob Tanswell wrote a nice piece on The Athletic. I don't know if you've checked it out. But it's about his role since Lavia went down, and meaning that he's been playing as the deepest lying midfielder, which is costing us when we've got possession because he kind of drops back into the back four sometimes. So it could be massive for him coming back to him.
We can see that his presence was made suited as there's been a drop off in Ward-Prowse's form. Seeing yet Tanswell's article really showed that all the major metrics Ward-Prowse is less on this year. And that's because he might be having to do more of all the dirty work and all the coverage that Romeo was able to provide last year. So with Lavia coming into his own, really solidifying it and providing that six, the DM approach, allowed Ward-Prowse to get forward, at least in the first games. And we saw that significantly in the last couple games right before Lavia got hurt. And we couldn't hope for him to get back any quicker. And hopefully this B team will give him the game time experience, which will allow us to be ready to go against Newcastle and have him back start in the starting lineup.
Yeah, 4 weeks training for him will be absolutely fantastic. Such good news. And also a bit of training possibly for Armel Bella Kotchap, because he's progressing nicely and quicker than we've he could be an option for Newcastle. That came out in the week, didn't it, Kevin? You slid that article my way. I guess it will all depend on how he responds to training. I'm guessing because, you know, there was talk about surgery, but that's been shelved. I'm thinking maybe it's because, if he gets selected for the World Cup, then you know, he's not going to have that surgery. But I think he wants to give this training this week a go and see how he is. And yeah, maybe on the bench for Newcastle. That is a bit of a surprise, Kevin.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting him back this year, but I think it's definitely will give us an option for Newcastle. I don't know what back two would you go with. If there's a question mark about whether he's fit enough, who would you play in the back two? I mean, if, to be honest, I don't see why we wouldn't stick with what we've been going with.
Maybe not straight away. I don't think, I mean, if you can keep him on the bench. I mean, that second half in that Crystal Palace game, Chaletazar looked a lot more comfortable, especially on the ball. I don't think there's any real panic back there just yet. The main issue is the right back role. But I mean, if he's fit enough for the bench, then yeah, maybe bring him on for the last like 20 minutes or so and see how he gets on, and then play him. Definitely play him then in that Sheffield Wednesday game. Kevin, when Wednesday we went to the open training day. Did you enjoy yourself?
I did, yeah. It was a fun little day out. Your kids seemed to enjoy it more than I expected.
Yeah, me too, because I kind of dragged them along.
That was fun, get a close look at... we say, like, about team selections, like, well, we don't know what Ralph sees in training. Well, we got a little glimpse of what goes on.
Walcott looks amazing.
Yeah, Walcott looks another level.
He got a hat-trick, didn't he, at one point on that little match at the end? Yeah, the mini-match.
That's right, yeah.
He got a hat-trick. He was looking sharp.
Target.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, if he pulls off performances like that week in, week out, you kind of can't blame Ralph for keeping him in the team. Yeah, at least on the bench.
Yeah. Loanies, though, there's not a lot to go for in the loanies. They all played. They all won or lost. Other than that, there was nothing really to report, apart from Simi, who picked up a yellow card. But yeah, birthdays then. We've had two birthdays actually today. So happy birthday to Neil Shipperley and Stern John. Yeah, Neil Shipperley's birthday. How old is Neil Shipperley and Stern John?
They're both the same age.
No, they're not, but they both share a birthday. There's 2 years apart.
So Shipperley is 51.
And Stern John is 49?
49 in that case, yeah.
No, Neil Shipperley is 48 and Stern John is 46.
Okay.
So, yeah, quite close, fairly close. You're quite good at that.
It's been quite a while since we mentioned Neil Shipperley. We normally used to make inappropriate jokes about him.
Well, we can always do that still. I mean,
yeah.
I love the inappropriate joke and all that, but yeah. B-team, then, playing Middlesbrough today, as we just mentioned. That was a 12 p.m. kickoff. They're deep into the second half now. Big news from that game was that Lavia starts, as we've said. But also, McCarthy, Lewis Payne, Juan Larios, Ainsley Maitland-Niles, Sekou Mara, Theo Walcott, captain in the side, Moussa Dzeneppo and Samuel Adozie, all in that starting lineup for the B team. Doesn't seem fair, does it? Yeah, all of them making the team today. So. And Maitland-Niles is pulling a double as well. Played yesterday.
Well, if it's good enough for Leeds. Then...
Yeah, Leeds did it against us, didn't they? Then they had Bamford playing and all that, just coming back out of injury. But yeah, the women's then, they are playing right now as well. At St Mary's against Sunderland. It's a 12 p.m. kickoff. I don't know the score. It was 0-0 at half time because I was watching a little bit of it.
1-0.
They won 1-0.
Second half goal from Elapusi.
Alapuzzi again. Ah, nice. Good stuff. And their next game is on Wednesday, the 2nd of November, against Coventry United, and that is at St Mary's. Under-18s, then. They played Leicester away yesterday, Saturday the 29th of October, and they won 6-1. So that was a fantastic win.
Wow.
Goals from Will Merry, captain Jem Hewlett, Cammy Doyle with a brace, and a brace for Sam Amu-Amayar. So that was a much-needed win. I think it was their first of the season. Let's take them off the bottom into 11th now on 5 points. So, yeah, and their next match is on Saturday, the 5th of November, against Everton away, and that's the Under-18 League Cup. OK, so that's all the news. And now we have to go into this Crystal Palace game then. Ralph's 150th game, by the way. Did you know that?
Oh, I didn't know.
Kind of snuck up that one, didn't it? So, yeah, we went in unbeaten in three. Positive results against West Ham, Bournemouth and Arsenal. Hoping that we've, you know, ridden the worst times and they're all behind us. Still riding that injury crisis, though, because Kyle Walker-Peters obviously missing still. Met another tough day with a makeshift back line. Kev, Ainsley Maitland-Niles was available again, but Ralph decided to stick with what worked against Arsenal and confident that we could do something, I guess. Just made that one change, Che Adams in for Adam Armstrong. But yeah, what were your thoughts on this lineup pre-game?
Yeah, that makes sense. We've got the problem at right back that's not going to solve itself anytime soon. He's gone for that favourite option of playing Lianco on the right.
To me, why couldn't he play Maitland-Niles back there? I mean, we mentioned this last week in Tim's preview, and Tim said that he was going to go with Lianco there. And I said, I think he might go with Maitland-Niles because he can, and he's played right back. So I don't see I don't know why he didn't do it, to be honest.
Yeah, but you know, I think there's a more pressing gap in our midfield for Maitland-Niles to fill rather than the right back.
Yeah, but there wasn't pre-game, was there? He thought Diallo could do the job.
His form has been, you know, inconsistent, shall we say.
A bit like the team, yeah. But you were happy with the 11 then?
Like I said, happy as you can be. It's just to, again, another weird fullback situation. Yeah, Perot gets injured, then we're completely fucked up.
Well, you got Larios still there.
Yeah.
But it's very, very young. Tim, Ralph was really, really coy pre-game about how he was going to shape up. But what was clear was that Lianco would have a job to do on Wilf Zahar. And used him at right back.
Yeah, that's a hot-headed matchup. We definitely saw that in the first half. Lianco. Yeah. So with Perot and then Lianco, what ended up happening was Lianco did not do as many overlaps that you would traditionally see with Walker Peters. So it allowed Perot to go free, and knowing that, and Lianco did not go forward all too often. He did occasionally when he needed, but it slotted more into that kind of a back three when we had the ball, and especially in the back. So a lot, and Perot just went up and made overlap runs. So to me, it made sense, and I think that was the idea that if it's a back four with Perot when we without the ball, back three with the ball, and I think he always wanted to keep it because he wanted to keep continuity. Ultimately, it didn't work out, but...
No, especially not in that first half. It didn't work whatsoever. Lianco was guilty of, like, wrestling him quite a bit. Picked up the booking. Probably could have had another one, if I'm being honest. But, yeah, second half seemed to ease off a little bit. But, yeah, that first half was a bit of a disaster, really, wasn't it?
It didn't look good. No, it did not look good at all for them. And just looking at it, seeing it, was it the right setup? Was it the right formation? I think we saw that going into the second half, whatever adjustments were made were correct. So I felt a lot more comfortable in the second half. But once again, you're only playing 45 minutes of good football. That's not enough. You got to play 90.
Exactly. And
we put ourselves 1-0 in a hole down, and then we can talk about the second half and the lack of clinical scoring here shortly.
We'll get to that. But the start, Kev, we had quite a good start, actually, I thought, because we pressed and got a corner straight away, but then Palace turned it around really quickly, turned around quicker than a pair of Kevin's pants. But this back line clearly struggling, and Diallo too, because he was just looking out of place that entire first half.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really much a surprise that the first half was a complete mess. I mean, because the formation itself is a bit of a mess. Like, so we transitioning from, like, yeah, 3-4 at the back, and then Perot getting forward, OUC getting forward. Diallo hanging back, Ward-Prowse here and there, you know, Revo up with Adams. It is just a complete mess. But yeah, the first few minutes, we always seem to have a chance right out of the gate, and then it just quickly goes to shit. But yeah, it was a good corner that Perot forced, and it could have had a goal straight away from Oyunusi's header.
That's now you said that, my stream was... do you ever get these streams that kind of, like, repeat themselves?
Yes.
Yeah. Mine did that with the corner, and I thought we had three corners. And then I realised that it was repeating itself, and I was like, oh, so it was just one corner. I thought the commentator's saying the same thing. Nothing's changing here. It took me a while to realise, but yeah.
We played Spurs early on our last season, and we conceded basically the same goal three times. I was convinced that had happened to me then.
Yeah, no, that actually did happen.
But that actually did happen. I was refreshing. Oh, fuck. Oh, it says 2-0, 3-0 now. Oh, my God.
Guys, lots of people saying that after the game that we need a new goal scorer, or we need a goal scorer, really. Someone who is almost guaranteed a goal when he's got the ball in the box, and Che isn't the main man for that. I mean, he needs somebody up there with him. I kind of agree with that, yeah. It's not news, though, because during the window, we said that we needed to bring someone in, didn't we? We said it was essential, and we haven't got that.
We've brought in Mara.
Oh, forgive me, because he's that clinical goal scorer, isn't he?
Yeah, he was banging in 20 a season in the league and last season, wasn't he? Yeah, it's weird. I think, you know, all other positions, I think, that's why we got an experienced centre-back that we needed. A load of, talented young wingers from Man City.
Yeah, obviously playing understudy to the main team, right? But
yeah, Maitland-Niles is a decent loan deal that makes perfect sense.
And a great squad player.
A great squad player, yeah, very versatile. But yeah, the one thing we're lacking is a proven goal scorer. And I don't really understand why the new owners weren't willing to splash out on pay the money that's needed to get a proven goal scorer in. Because, you know, promising talents, we can have as many of them as we want. But they're not going to get the goals this season. You know, we're looking 2-3 years ahead. It's fine. You know, get them in. But you need someone who's going to fill basically Danny Ings's boots that haven't been filled for the last couple of seasons. So.
Well, I mean, Breuer excluding, because obviously he was a loan deal. But yeah, and this is going to be the downfall, isn't it? You can't score goals in this division, then you are going to go down or come close to it. Not enough goals. And but with our team, it's kind of like there's a sense of spreading the goals around. You can see because a lot of them are notching goals here and there. Che obviously leads the team with 5 goals in all competition. But guys, I just want to go through his chances in this game, and we'll kind of rate them and then think, like, you know, could we do better with the players that we've had recently? So I'll take a look at the first chance that he had. The first one, when he hit the post, okay, it was offside, but I'm going to include this anyway because that was a lovely effort, right? He did. It was all his own work. He cut inside of Anderson, I think it was, and he curled a shot, and it smacks the base of the post. Yes, I mentioned it was offside anyway, but you look at the strikers that we've had over the last couple of years, Armando Broger, and you've got Danny Ings, and would they have done any better with that? No, I don't think they would have done. That was not what he's being judged on, right? That's a great chance created and almost taken.
That was his best effort all match, yeah. Unfortunate that slightly mistimed the run and, yeah, just shy of going in the net.
Still want the player to finish the goal when he's offsides, because that only then will construe confidence going into the next chance that
he
gets.
And he didn't realize he was offside. When he struck that ball, he had no idea.
Yeah, which is totally fine. So, but, you know, once again, I think that's probably the one thing that we can knock Che on consistently now for a while, is his ability to be clinical in the box and when it truly needs to happen.
That was not one of them, though, I don't think. That was something that, yeah, he made himself and he created it himself and tried to take the chance. That was fine. But yeah, the second one. Ward-Prowse like slides this great pass for it to Adams, and he's one-on-one and he's kicked it straight at Guaita. And that's a really bad miss. But, Kevin, what I will say, the build-up, he holds off Anderson and he does a little give and go and he's in the space. He did everything perfectly up until that shot. And that just emphasises my point of him needing to play off of somebody else. And that person doesn't exist at the moment, because Ings or Broja both would have finished that one, right?
Yeah, I'm more clinical goal scorer. I wanted to ask the question, do you think is he unlucky, or is it just a matter of making your own luck with these sort of things?
I think he's a confidence player. I think if Saints are in the middle of the road, like 10th, 11th in the league, and they're scoring a lot of goals for fun, then I think he's got goals in him. He thinks about it more. It's more of a composure thing, isn't it? And I think that comes with his confidence.
Decision-making just comes out of his confidence.
Well, I mean, taking a look at the third one, he was on the penalty spot. That was a perfect pass from Aribo as well, and he snaps his shot straight at Guaita. Lack of composure. But once again, like I said, the build-up was great. A great pass, great movement to get into the right position. On another day, if he has confidence, I think he gets that. And I think maybe he's feeling the pressure a little bit, because almost every game is a must-win for Saints. you get the ball at your feet and you kind of panic a little bit. There's no composure there. And he thinks, Chris, I need this. And, you know, snaps it. And he's just becoming wasteful. Yeah. I just think we need him in the team for everything that he does, because in all three of those chances that he missed, he did well. He did everything that he possibly should do, apart from the final bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, his effort's in there. He's got the athleticism and the strength, and I don't know, he's been a bit more consistent. Broja sort of started off amazingly, didn't he, last season, and just tailed off. Shea's
slipped
been
away. Yeah.
At least consistent in what he does.
That's true, yeah. But, you know, you look at his match on the whole and he was wasteful. It was a wasteful day for him. And it was,
I mean, with the chances he had, he should have at least put one on.
I don't know what his XG was, but I'm guessing it was more than the Palace team put together. But, you know, like I said, if Saints are playing well and he finishes those, on another day we score all of those and we have a comfortable win. You know, or do we get a new striker to fill that role? What do you think?
God, I mean, you want to keep Adams in the team. Right? Yeah, ideally, you want Adams and
number nine.
So this is a game that is going to be defined by three individual moments, one of which was Lianco getting picked by Zaha, which led to the goal. And then the next two are the missed chances that he had. So in an appropriate fashion, if we had that clinical goal scorer, and I said it in our Discord group, if we had Danny Ings, one of those two is guaranteed to go in. And I think that is just the problem. Everything you said about Adams doing everything else except for that makes a whole lot of sense. And to me, looking at those chances, the first one is way worse than the second one. So the first one itself was it was a one-on-one with the keeper, and the keeper was rushing, and it literally hit him in his lower half. So Guiato went down, and the way that his positioning was and where he shot it, even me as a recreational keeper, basically seeing you shot it right at the keeper. You didn't even make a challenge on the place. It was just piss poor location, and I was really upset with that.
You had time to dummy him.
Yeah, you had time.
Or you chip, or you go and you aim for the corner. You're aiming at least more at an angle to a corner, but they shot it right at him. You're not going to go. Your better bet is not to go through the keeper's legs. It's not going to always happen like that. So the second chance, at least. When he let the goal in, the idea was he wanted to get as big as possible and get it as quick as possible. So he just tried to make, he starfished himself and put him out in all five appendages and just tried to hopefully would have hit that, and it didn't. But the second one, he had a cross where the Rebo made the right play, and Adams actually was a part of the buildup in it too.
Yeah.
He did go cross body, he did go angle, but once again, poor finishing, and it went in. Guiata didn't have to even reach outside of his normal arm length. He didn't have to make a dive. If he had to make a dive going beyond his normal length, then that's positive for Guiata, but not for Adams. It was just terrible. And yeah. I found it, I'm going to look back at this game and say, if we are going to get relegated by 1 point, or we're nervy because we didn't do it, I think we should have gotten a point out of this game, and this is going to be one of you got to beat these players at this level, these teams at this level. You're not going to necessarily go and beat Manchester United or Manchester City. That's not expected. If you get any points from it, great. But you have to challenge. You have to get results against Crystal Palace, and shit like this is going to get us relegated.
Kev, if those chances fall to anybody else on the pitch at that time, who else would you want to take that shot? There wouldn't really be many, would there?
Yeah, I mean, this is the problem, isn't it? We don't have a finisher.
Okay. Stuart Rebo.
Hit the post, yeah.
My point is, there's not many people on the field that it falls to in a position like that that you wouldn't trust more than Che. He's the man to do that, right? That's what he gets paid to do at the end of the day.
Precisely.
Yeah, the rest of that second half, the rest of the first half, Palace continued to press and stretch us. It looked like that we were playing with 10 men at times. It looked that easy for them, and I think Eze had an effort that was close, but then Edouard had the ball in the net, and that was offside. But they were able to move through our midfield with ease. And I think he was offside more by luck than judgment, because Perrault just wasn't quick enough there.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, it was... I don't know. Did I misremember? But I thought they had the goal in the net three times in the first half.
I thought it was only twice.
Oh, okay.
Unless your stream went.
maybe my stream went.
Anyway, then Palace did have the ball in the net, and it was coming, and it was Lianco, wasn't it? Weak there, and you know he knows that was his fault, and Zaha easily strips him of possession, and then the rest is easy. Edouard with a little tap in.
Yeah, I mean, it's off the back of an early yellow card on Lianco, which I suppose had to calm him down a little bit. I mean, he had another foul in later on, didn't he, that he almost got sent off for.
But, yeah.
That certainly didn't help. But,
no.
Yeah, just way, way too easily mugged off.
Yeah, that's poor judgment.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Tim, the first half was dogged by those bad tackles, the lack of movement, giving away possession, and just dodgy defending in general. There was yellow cards. I think Lianco and Salisi were both booked in the first half. Lianco looked out of his depth. It's quite hard to believe that we finished this game with 11 men, because, you know, he's certainly no right back, is he?
Yeah, he's not a right back. And I think, though, he finally settled in the second half. Obviously, he got picked in the air leading to the goal in the first half. But there was one right chance that Zaha had in the second half where Lianco gave him so much space leading in. Zaha brought it in, and he gave him so much space. And then eventually Lianco just took the right step, and he was able to secure and knock the ball off of the corner.
That was brilliant.
I wondered what he was doing.
Like,
holy shit.
Yeah, I was like, why are you giving it it down the left-hand side? He's got so much space there. What are you doing? And then he made a perfect tackle, didn't he?
And he made I was like, okay, thank you. Nice job.
Yeah.
Like, I see what you were doing there. You were baiting him. You knew better than what most of the fans watching the game were saying, because we're like, oh my god, he's just gonna cross body him, and it's gonna be a goal in the opposite corner, and we're down 2-0. But he made that first step that he kept going back. He back trailed, and then eventually that one step. Great defensive play. I'm pleasantly surprised, and.
I'm convinced that he was kind of like unaware of his surroundings, or thought he was still playing centre back and didn't realise that he was the one that was furthest right. Mm-hmm. And then thought, oh, hold on, and then just made the tackle. But yeah, either way, it worked out.
Yeah, either way, it worked out. I thought Chaletasar was a bit grabby again. I thought there was some chances that he could have gotten beat, and that would be more so the Elise, the Eze, the Zaha versus Edouard, because Edouard's more of that target man number nine up top, where you've got those flair players in the three that I just mentioned. So I thought there hasn't been a true error leading to a goal from Chaletasar. That's probably the only thing that's his saving grace right now. But hopefully he can up his game a little bit more. And I do think that Belakachev will come back in for him once he's up and healthy.
Yeah, as soon as he's 100% healthy, I completely agree. Kevin, half-time, Palace just edged the possession, which I guess in a way is kind of more worrying, because we did see lots of the ball, but we just failed to do anything with it, failed to move it. We had four total shots and none of them on target. And Palace managed 9 with 3 of theirs on target. Not threatening at all. But the stat that really grabbed me was Palace had 204 passes and we had 200. That might as well be equal, but what in the hell did we do with our passes compared to them?
Fluff them. I mean, what's our passing percentages like?
I don't know the percentages, but yeah, it must be low. But they were putting passes through the middle. We were resulting to long balls and then losing possession. They were going right through the middle of Diallo, because he was struggling all over the place. I mean, Eze and Schlupp just controlled him, and he couldn't handle that. He had 3 fouls inside 20 minutes. And, yeah, just about as much use as a condom machine in the Vatican.
Yeah, he definitely was a liability. Poor both in and out of possession, losing the ball way too easily. It just seemed totally out of his depth, and I just couldn't wait for half time, because I was convinced. Well, I mean, you never know with Ralph, but I was convinced that he was going to be subbed subbed off at half time.
But yeah, he did change it at the half. Maitland-Niles comes in and we played so much better. You know, do you know what, Kev? There were moments that I was actually enjoying watching us play.
Yeah.
I didn't want it to end. This is great. Yeah. As the second half wore on, with the play improved, I thought. And I thought it was coming. I thought the equaliser was going to happen. Maitland-Niles was looking more and more comfortable, I thought. He was pressing. He was winning balls in the middle. Something we weren't doing in the first half. I'm moving the ball to Armstrong, who forced that save from Guaita. That was a great save, because looking at it at first, I thought, you know, you shouldn't get beat at your near post like that. But Armstrong hit it so well, and that was going in. And that was a fantastic save, I thought, from Guaita.
Yeah, I mean, a few great saves. I mean, we definitely kept Palace in it. Yeah, we were much more confident in that second half.
Yeah, Armstrong at the post as well, from a similar angle. That was unlucky, because that was going to beat him. But the chances were coming, weren't they? And there was a real effort out there, I thought. And you can't say that they weren't trying. But it's
Adams, again, twice straight at the keeper. Stu hitting the post and the keeper. We need to be a bit more clinical in front of goal.
But the pressing was better, I thought, as well. There was no dropping off. There was more urgency. Elianusi forced a mistake out of Tariq Mitchell. And then that was the chance that Che squandered. I know which one you say, but yeah, the best chance. Lianco on Zaha in the second half, Tim. You mentioned that you thought it was better. Yeah, I thought it was brilliant. We talked about that that chance that he stopped from Zaha down the left. Got some well-timed tackles in there as well. He continued to manhandle him without picking up another yellow card, though. So he was managing Zaha a lot better in that second half.
Yeah, absolutely. And then eventually, as they went off in the 60th minute, I think that only helped us when it came to solidifying the team. Strange. And then also when Edouard went off, too, we're looking at the 75th minute. It would put Zaha up top, which then put...
Elise went off as well, didn't he?
Yeah, at least, but he went off in the 86.
Oh yeah,
that was fun. I mean, that's not enough to make a huge difference. But Edouard, the last 15 though, with Edouard off, Zaleta and Chalidasar is the only one without a yellow card. So if you have to, he takes the yellow and takes him down outside the box if he needs to. But really, when Eze went off, I saw less of a threat, because I don't think Jordan Ayew is much of a threat. And he's one of those.
Well, he scored against us last season.
Yeah, well, now I say that and I should eat my own words. So
no, I get you. I get it. I think the whole back 4-3-5, whatever way you look at it, was more comfortable second half in general. The substitutions had helped bringing Ayew on. Yeah, he's no bother. He's no Zaha.
Yeah, I mean, that front four, I mean, that would strike fear in any defence, I think. Zaha, Eze, Elise, Edouard, if they're playing like they were playing.
Well, and even Schlupp as well.
Yeah. Schlupp, Milivojevic. Yeah, they've got it's a decent side and they're playing well.
They're tough and they're young, mostly, quick. There's talk about Eze being called up to the England squad as well. Which is something that I've never really thought of before, but that could be an option.
Realize he was English.
Yeah, born in England. Mm. So that could be. Yeah, why not? He's playing better than Grealish. But yeah, not enough in the end. 1-0 loss just makes these next two games so important, doesn't it? And Leeds winning, us slipping down the table to 17th now. Do we have to start watching Leicester, Wolves and Forest?
Please don't make me.
Only when we're playing them. I've got a question for you that we mentioned at the top of the show. James Ward-Prowse. Now, all of us Saints fans have said this for a while, that he hasn't been at his best this season. And we mentioned that news article from Jacob Tanswell for The Athletic and his involvement, how Lavia's absence has affected him and the way he likes to play. But yeah, I think, I mean, Tim, you brought this up as well. Romeo also, the deep-lying role and the cover that he provided has definitely affected him. Because those two had such a great relationship, an understanding. It takes time to build up, doesn't it? And the bite size that we've seen from Lavia and him just hasn't been enough yet. But second half, I think he got forward a little bit more. It proved a little bit more effective. And I just think that most opposing fans, even the commentators, are praising Ward-Prowse still for his previous season's efforts. And that he's kind of like living off of them still. But now I'm feeling that they're starting to change, and he's starting to notice that his lack of form this season, and this can only hinder his chances of that England squad. Both of you guys, I want to ask this question. If Southgate names his team right now for the World Cup, does James Ward-Prowse get in?
Well, he can play right back. So there's a little bit more of a shot.
If he can play right back, why didn't he play there yesterday then?
That's a very good
so
point.
So
yeah,
I want
to make Diallo and to JWP at right back.
Yeah, he might as well. Yeah. He's been so defensive this season anyway.
Looking at his formation, so you've got four center mids. So you've got Jude Bellingham, Declan Rice, Jordan Henderson, and that fourth one has somewhat been Calvin Phillips, but he's been out injured. So who else is that? You know, who slides in there? We don't know. I think that it's a 50-50 shot, and if I had to guess, I would also say no.
But, I mean, if you look at it from a point of view that we don't have that free kick taker, and yes, he can take a penalty, is that going to be enough to get him in on that alone? We know that it didn't happen in the Euros, did it? It didn't happen in the last World Cup. It wasn't enough for him to get into the team.
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know what it'll be like. But
he hasn't featured in the build-up to it either.
No. And his set pieces have been lacking this season. His corners haven't. I mean, we haven't scored from a corner, have we? Forgive me, but I don't think we have.
I think we've even had a real chance from a set piece this season.
No, we've had the Che Adams goal against Bournemouth was a cross from Perro, wasn't it? So yeah, that wasn't even a Prowse one.
Salisu long throw as well.
Yeah.
Okay, that doesn't count.
No. So yeah, I'm with you, gents. I don't think that he's done enough this year. And if Southgate was serious and saying that he picks his players on form rather than name, then he has to stand by that and say, no, he hasn't been good enough. And you watch, Calvin Phillips will come into the squad with one leg. yeah, some stats, Kev. Do you have any stats?
Possession, 56%. We dominated possession. Yeah, 14 shots for us, 12 for them. We had 4 on target to their 3. Palace had 8 corners, we had 4.
And Ralph had said post-game that, you know, when you don't score a goal, it is not a fair result because this is what was the difference today. They did it once and we definitely had the bigger chances, but we didn't score. That's the reason we lost this game today. And Ralph was behind his players. I saw his interview on Match of the Day as well. And he said, you know, we win together and we lose together, which is fair enough. This loss, for me, it wasn't on Ralph. You can blame the first half inclusion of Diallo all you want, but nobody was complaining about it before the game. The injuries that he's having to deal with at the back, and, you know, when you look at Palace's front five, then, you know, they were looking good in the first half. He had to do something about it, and he did. There was no lack of effort in that second half as well. It just didn't come. And I think his halftime team talk was one of those occasions where it did seem to work. It did do the trick somewhat. It's not Ralph's fault that Guaita was good and that Armstrong hit the post and that Adams couldn't take his chances. But, you know, we lost, and we lost a game that we can't afford to lose, though. That's the way it is.
Yeah, and he reacted. He, you know, he saw the problem with Diallo, solved that. We can't say that he doesn't have in-game management. He's doing this just, yeah, on the pitch. The players that were there didn't do enough.
It goes down to the three individual plays that I mentioned. The Uncle getting picked and two chances that Adams missed. So to me, I think a draw would have been a fair result based on the second half performance, but we didn't get anything from it. And now we are sitting precariously close to relegation spots and hoping if we are better than three other teams in the league.
It's a bad way to look at it. It's just a tragic, tragic way to look at it. This is going to be a difficult question for you both, but who's your man of the match? Kevin, I'll start with you.
Christ. It's tough, isn't it? Not Lianco. Not Diallo.
Your man of the match is not Diallo.
Anyone who's not Diallo, they get man of the match. Yeah, Rebo was positive. Zunu pulled off a save or two. Yeah, Che put the effort in. Came out of unlucky or poor judgment. Salisu, fairly solid at back. I think Duye and Salisu were decent pairing that back. I'm going to give it to Salisu.
No one really stood out, but there are three players that, at least for me, felt like I had a positive performance. Salisu was 1, Aribo was 2, and Bazuna was 3. what can you do more about it? I didn't think there was anything outstanding that Mizuno had to do to separate. Aribo did the dirty work like he does most of the time. And then Salisu, I think, has been the linchpin this season. While he hasn't in that super duper excellent form that he had for a few games in a row there last season, he has stepped up and gotten back to his very above average positive game. And clearances, ability to control and be involved in the play and being able to press high when necessary for players receiving the ball in that right in that middle third to final third barrier. So I'll take Salisu.
Okay. Like Tim said, not many standouts. So it was a really, really difficult one. And I was like you, Kev, I was just going for the whole team thinking like, what did they do to stand out? I'm surprised that none of you mentioned Stuart Armstrong because he did have a couple of really good chances. Well, not even real good chances. He just made the most of them and they were good. But, and this is not about crapping on Diallo by any means. It's just, I'm going to give it to Ainsley Maitland-Niles because I know he only played 45 minutes, but the sole purpose of the game, the sole reason that the game had changed was when he come on. And I just think, that was probably tactics as well, but I don't think he had a bad game at all. And I just think from what he did, I was watching him individually and I thought he stood out. So I'm going to give it to Ainsley Maitland-Niles for me, for man of the 45. It doesn't get any easier, does it? Because next week, Sunday the 6th of November, 2 p.m. at St Mary's, we've got Newcastle United, and that is on Sky Sports. Our biggest wins at home against Newcastle then. We had a 4-1 win in the League Cup in 1968. Long time ago, that one. We had another 4-1 win in 1986. We had a 4-2 win in 1999. I remember that one. And then we had back-to-back 4-0 wins in 2014. So one of them was in March, one of them was in September, so across two different seasons. That was fantastic. I remember them too. The last five then against them at St Mary's. So we drawn, lost, won, lost. So that's 5 points from the last 15, from a possible 15. Head-to-head, Saints have won 38. Newcastle, how many of Newcastle won overall, Kev? If Saints have won 38, how many of Newcastle won?
40.
Yeah, very close. 42. So Saints have won 38, Newcastle have won 42, and we have drawn 24. Tim, here we go then. How do we stop them? Because they're having a good one. Just the one loss, and that was at Anfield, I think. Yeah, very difficult to beat, it seems. They've had 3 wins in a row, and then a big win against Villa on Saturday. Callum Wilson scoring and Miguel Almiron playing the best I've ever seen, because I was convinced that he was a flop for a couple of years and seems to be picking it up a lot now. And he's got 7 goals in all competitions this season, scored again yesterday, I believe. And they're sitting they're sitting pretty at fourth at the moment. Are we seriously considering them for a Champions League spot?
I think we should be seriously considering them for a Europa League spot at this point. But is it serious for Champions League? They continue their current form. They're sitting in fourth. There's no reason to be unrealistic. I think that they remind me of West Ham last year in that they are, I want to say, they're not the top tier six, they're not the top six teams, but they've been playing fantastic and they've been continually building into a strong team here. So crazy to think about, but the easiest way that we can stop Newcastle is to crash the Saudi Arabian economy, and so that the PIF that it funds them goes downhill completely and they have to sell off all of their players before the next week just in order to, keep themselves afloat. That's going
to
be the best
what
way
we just
to do
have
it.
To think up is an instant substitution oil.
Yeah, well, that's easier said than done, isn't it?
Absolutely. So looking back at the Villa game they just played against, they ran a 4-3-3 formation that Eddie Howe has just really taken a hold and had a solid actual name that they can truly name as a starting 11. They're playing above what their talent has.
Sure.
So a few players that are really solidifying things. Fabian Schär is really coming into his own. He's been absolutely fantastic. Kieran Trippier has really came in and solidified and, created himself as that captain and a strong team player. Bruno Guimaraes is a stud. And then you got players who have really stepped up from
Joe Linton. Dan Byrne stepped up.
Yeah, Dan Byrne, Joe Linton, Miguel Amaron. Miggy came over from Atlanta United here in the U.S. and MLS, and he hasn't been as good, but he has been now. And then you've got Callum Wilson, which, I mean, he's just he's always been a clinical finisher.
He's a Bournemouth reject, you know, that's what he is.
Yeah, well, he's hitting them home. And
no,
doing
I,
really
I like
well
I like Callum Wilson. I think he's a good player.
Well, I also think that, and we talked about, you know, getting Chris Wood into the squad. Chris Wood had a buyout clause of £25 million, and Newcastle paid it because they thought that it's going to not only help them because they needed it in the spring, but they wanted to hurt them. And you know what? Burnley got relegated. So to them, I think that the £25 million was absolutely worth it and allowed them to go
so
into.
So wait, all you're saying is that they paid £25 million just to get Burnley relegated.
It's a huge factor. And I think that was because look what Chris Wood was able to, you know, has always done there. He caused a nuisance and created havoc, and he was a strong presence up front. And Newcastle came in and said, we're currently getting relegated. We want to push somebody else down. And then they went out and bought Walt Weghorst, where he didn't do a whole lot there. He only had a couple goals in the spring, and I really think it helped them out. But that's besides the point. And then you've got like Nick Pope, and he did shit for England there the last couple of games, but he's great for the team. Yeah, except for Pickford. Except for Pickford, he's the only player that I can say that really steps up.
He's the reverse.
Yeah. So, you know, what do we think about who we're going to attack? What's going to happen? Well, I think that all the linchpin is Bruno Guimarães. And if we're able to work and push him off the ball, it's only going to help us, because I think Miggy's been feeded and is only successful because he's had that gelled and that team player work between Bruno. And Bruno is the guy to focus on. And
so we need to double team him with Lianco and Chaletazar then?
Get
the big guns out.
No, but I do think Lianco could fight a good fight against Joe Linton. He's a larger player.
Yes.
And so it's big on big, where Miggy is not. Lianco would get picked by Miguel Amaron just because of the size and the shiftiness, like he did with Zaha. I think that's I think Salisu and Chaletazar can take Callum Wilson out. And I think that, you know, there is a chance, but you're going to have somebody come in with a fantastic game, and that's going to be Trippier or who knows, Sven Botman, who they bought now over the offseason, could just come through and just dominate the back line and score a header on a corner kick that we're going to look like shit on. So,
don't say that.
All in all, lots going on for them, and there's a reason that they are successful. I think they will finish in a European place, albeit I think it's going to probably be like seventh and get that Europa Conference League. They'll slow down towards the end of the year. But nonetheless, this is going to be a really tough game, and let's hope that they get delayed in their travels from coming all the way down from Newcastle. So how are we going to how are we going to slot in? How are we going to go through? I know you mentioned ABK and then Lavia, and Lavia coming back. If Lavia is healthy, he should go right back into the lineup.
Seems healthy if he's playing today.
Yep. If Belakovic can play, he should go right back into the lineup. And then the only question mark then is what do you do with right back? To me, I don't know. Is Lianco the guy? Well, if Lianco's the guy, then I hope you match him up against Joe Linton, because
yes, I do too.
They're fiery. And the reason is Lianco can take out a guy who is a bigger, stronger player. I feel more confident in that than if he was matched up against Alan Saint-Maximin or Miguel Amaron. I just really think that because he got picked by Zaha, and they're going to see that and say, okay, they're going to go after Lianco that way. But Joe Linton's not going to out-bruise Lianco. Nobody can out-bruise Lianco.
No, I really want to see it. That's exciting stuff. And I'll be right there as well, because Joe Linton will be running down my side of the pitch in the first half. So that would be nice to see. Just incidentally, by the way, do you know the Saints B score? Because they won 8-1.
Really?
That's called taking out your pain on your little brother.
Looks
you're beating
like,
him up on Madden or
looks
FIFA.
Looks like we have a new goal scorer, because Theo Walcott scored a hat-trick, Kevin. I'm not joking. And Sekou Mara scored four. And Lewis Payne got the other. Maybe we should start with that team against Newcastle.
Yeah.
We always talk about five aside, who's gonna be your team. So I mean, you look at five aside and Nick Pope's really solidified. So do you want Pope or Bazunu? And
I'm gonna take Bazunu.
Yeah, I think that's why I was going to say I'm going to take Bazunu, not for the fact that Pope's a better shot stopper, but in a five aside, you want guys who might be a little bit better with their feet. And I don't trust Pope very much. He's an old school guy.
My reasoning is far more simple. It's just that I want more Newcastle players outfield.
Yeah, that's also a good one, too. So then who do you got? I've got Trippier, easy.
Yep.
I've got probably Kyle Walker-Peters, Bruno Guimaraes, and then I thought about Isak, but I think at least right now Isak's out injured for a while, so let's go with Callum Wilson up top.
You're not going to take Almiron.
Or you could take, well, not Almiron. I think it could be a fluke, but so you could take Saint-Maximin, because a five-a-side team, that guy is just completely crazy and all over the ball and all flair.
I'll take Saint-Maximin. Kyle Walker-Peters. I'll take Kyle Walker-Peters and Bazunu as my defensive Saints players, and I'll take Saint-Maximin, Callum Wilson, and Bruno. Easy. No Trippier.
No Trippier.
No room for him. Okay, right. Predictions. Kevin, you're up first.
Ah, fuck. Okay. I'm going to say it. We're going to lose. I think Newcastle are just on too good for him, and we're not on good enough for him. Even if Lavia gets in, I don't see him gelling that quickly. 2-0.
2-0 home loss.
I think we're going to get pumped, like 4-1. I really do not think. I think we'll look good for maybe 20 or 30 minutes of the game, but Eddie Howe will tactically outfit us in comparison. So I think we're going to get pumped 4-1. I really do.
I'm going to go the complete opposite. Saints going to win this game. It's going to happen. Saints have been on the back foot before. And how many times have we written them off? Like that Arsenal game, I was thinking we're going to get absolutely hammered here, and we turned it around. I just think we're going to start really well, and we're going to get a nice early goal. And I think we're going to shut them out. I think we're going to surprise everyone here. Newcastle were due a loss. They might overlook us. I honestly, truly believe that we're going to beat them. I feel so confident in that as well. So I'm going to go for a 1-0 Saints win.
Sounds great. Would love that.
I'd love to see the look on Eddie Howe's pursed lips.
Oh, yeah. I'm willing this into existence. This is going to happen. I really believe this.
Yep.
Come on, Saints. We can do this. Discord, then. Two movers up the table. Both Kurt Supple and Dan Fox went for 1-0 Palace wins. And as a result, there's a new leader at the top. Dan Fox now leapfrogs Colt Baker to the top spot on 24 points. Kev, you've got 20. I'm on 18, and Tim is at the bottom on 8. Tim has just run away, by the way, but just before I'm about to announce the tables of the Discord. So boo, Tim. Everybody point and laugh at him. Super 6, then. Round 17 was won by Stephen Allen on 16 points. Round 18 is still live, but at the moment, Steve Franklin is leading on 9. Overall lead at the moment, which is live still, it's Kevin Jewell still on 179. Fantasy football, Kev, how did it go this week? Did you get your captain sorted out?
Yeah, I captained Haaland, even though... You
Me
know,
too.
He probably wasn't going to be playing, but I thought if he is,
you
have to captain.
I did it because I thought everyone was going to take him out and not captain him. So I thought if there's a chance that he does play, I'm gonna do it and maybe leapfrog a few people. The question is next week though, is he gonna be starting next week? Because he's still carrying that knock. I don't know.
Yeah. Who's your vice?
Well, I have got Son, who's going to move to 4 points. He didn't do that well. But again, next week, I have had to change it up because Son's not on form. So I've given it to Anthony as the vice next week.
Well, this week, it should switches to Almer, and I picked up 12. So that's quite a good call for me.
Well done. Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, I've got Trippier, me and De Bruyne all picked up 11, and Almer only got 12. So very pleased.
Oh, you got De Bruyne as well?
Yeah.
If it's not one, it's the other, right?
Exactly. Yeah, next week I've picked up Callum Wilson, so... Yeah,
oh.
maybe I'll captain him.
Yeah, do that, because I still think we're going to win 1-0, so.
Okay. Yeah, only if we win, I'm pleased. And if Wilson scores a hat-trick and I've made him captain, well, kind of softens the blow a little bit, doesn't it?
I have benched Prowsey for next week, and I've brought on all my Newcastle players. I got Dan Burn and Kieran Trippier in. So
I had to get rid of Prowsey. I just couldn't hold on to him any longer. Sad to say.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. He's only picking up 2 points a game, isn't he? So.
Yeah. Not even scoring, not really getting assists either. So sad. So at the moment, I'm the top of the pod, isn't
he? Applaudable. Well done.
And I'm slowly climbing back up the ranks of our big league. Ninth.
I'm 42nd now.
Okay.
Slipped down.
Looking better.
No, I was doing all right. I slipped right down.
Yeah. Well, it looks like Lucy Hynette's off the top of the league now, and
she was Marley last week.
Eiling Allen. Yeah, but she slid down. She's now 10 points behind Marlon Eiling Allen.
She only picked up 35 points this week, Kev, so, yeah. You're not that far behind her.
Yeah, what's happened to her?
She captained Haaland as well, if that helps.
Yeah, Salah Vice. Yeah, we'll see. But, yeah, second, Chris Ambridge. Third, Lucy Hynette.
Where am I? Okay, yeah, as usual, one free guess on the first clue. Are you ready?
Yes.
This stadium is located 74 miles from St Mary's. 5 points.
You're at Vicarage Road.
My goodness. No. No, that's a good guess. Clue two for 4 points. In the west of the City of London for 4 points.
Cute there, aren't they?
Next clue?
Yeah, go on.
Currently competing in the Championship and is a walking distance to Shepherd's Bush.
I think I've got a guess.
Oh, you're going to go for it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it QPR?
It is QPR. Well done. Good stuff. Clue four for 2 points. Most notable rivalries with Chelsea and Luton, oddly enough. They've also got a rivalry with Stoke, which I can't quite figure out.
Brentford closer than anyone
Brentford
else.
As well, yeah. But the fiercest rivalry apparently is with Chelsea. Yeah, I thought Brentford and Charlton, I guess, and Fulham would have been around the same sort of place. But no, Chelsea and Luton are the fiercest rivals. Clue five, nickname Rangers, and have recently released Charlie Austin to Brisbane with a capacity of 18,500. I am at...
Loftus Road.
It is Loftus Road. There's no sponsorship for that. So,
it would be the win.com stadium.
But yes, anyway, that is it for this week. And next week, we will go over the Newcastle game and prepare for both Sheffield Wednesday and Liverpool before that World Cup break. So until then, up the Saints.
Up the Saints.
Up the Saints.
Up at Southampton.
Podcast Network.